WB Realty, Central Iowa's premier real estate brokerage. WB has all the tools and the resources needed to make your next real estate transaction your best. Go to wbrealty.com to find out more information today.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Whenever you listen to the Shooter's Touch, that's our favorite time of the day, and we appreciate you listening. I'm Brian Claude, joined as always by my guy, Adam V. Adam, we have a fun guest today. What can you tell our listeners what they can expect here?
Yeah, we have Jack Brownlee on the pod this week. Jack is a longtime friend of the podcast. You've watched him growing up. I've watched him from college on, and just a really cool guest, a really, really, really fun conversation we had. It's good to know a little bit more about, you know, his time in Fort Dodge, high school, on to Kirkwood, and then on to Iowa to compete in the Big Ten as a Hawkeye. So really fun conversation. Excited for you guys to listen to him. And it was good, to, as usual, to connect with somebody that, you know, we've been watching, like I said, and competed against after the big boys, after he was in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and it was one of those things that surprisingly, a guy that we competed at in the local city circuits that we didn't even get to that. We had so much to talk with him about future stars and obviously his run in the state tournament at St. Ed's and his time at Kirkwood in Iowa. But yeah, Jack was one that I watched growing up, obviously playing in our conference up in the North Central Conference. And so been a guy that been in contact with for a long time, huge hoop head. I mean, the guy just loves and lives and breathes basketball and the culture that comes with it, the sneakers, the hip hop music, everything about it. So it was a fun conversation. Look forward to you guys listening to it. And as always, wherever you get your podcast, drop a 5-star. It helps us out with the algorithm and tell a friend about it. It's the Shooter's Touch and Jack Brownlee.
I got the shooter's touch. Can't nobody shoot like me. Fourth quarter down 3, need a 2-and-1. Better call on me, better call on me. If you know you need a shooter, I'm ice cold like a cooler. Get you right though, I can tutor. This that mic flow, I'm a hooper. I got blue faces on blue.
Well, shooters, as mentioned, Jack Brownlee. Jack, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, we're excited. Appreciate you taking some time. We're going to get into the state tournament talk. That's a big reason why we had you on in a couple of runs that you took the Gales on. But before we get into it, relevancy here, what did you think of the All-Star game last night?
You know, it's funny. I'm a huge NBA fan, huge basketball fan, but really big NBA fan. But I've never been super into the All-Star game. I've been into like the Saturday night dunk contest, 3-point contest, rookie game, but strangely I haven't been that excited for All-Star games. But you know, last night was incredible. I think the shooting was on display, how deep these guys can shoot it. And you know, sometimes people like to say the NBA doesn't play defense, but I was watching last night, like, it's impossible to guard these guys anymore. They just shoot it so deep that, it just is incredible.
Yeah, they almost need to set the teams up where they put Dame on one side and Curry on the other and then work your way back from there. Because having those two guys on the same team, it's not even fair in a game like that.
Yeah, the range of those two guys especially is crazy.
Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, a condensed version of the All-Star game. I'm in the same boat as you as far as I like the skills challenge and watching some of that just because it's different. Yesterday was a little bit different with that, but I think last year kind of brought my attention a little bit more back to the game and the different format because that game last year was awesome. And then obviously last night, Team LeBron was just too good. But another big win yesterday was for your Hawks. What do you think here? We're into March now. What's the outlook for the Hawks?
You know, defensively, sometimes they have some weaknesses. I think, you know, the casual fan can see But I love their grit. I love their toughness. Obviously Garza is a load, but I think they've got a lot of guys. It's nice. You want to look for teams to make runs in the tournament that have guys that can spread the floor and not just one or two scorers, but we've got like three or four guys that could get 15, 18 points. And so that makes us dangerous. It's first time in a long time. I'm really, really excited about, you know, the potential of what we could do.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's obviously, we've been talking about on the pod, comes on the defensive end, and they've been playing defense here the last 2 months of the season. And now it's just going to come down to staying healthy. Obviously, Wieskamp going down yesterday, but it sounds like everything's all right there, and keeping CJ on the floor. They have the guys, they have the horses. And so I think this is going to be a fun march.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah, should be good. And obviously, March means state tournament time here in the state of Iowa, with the boys' state tournament starting this week. You guys, your high school team, Jack, had some really good runs down there, some really good games, really good tournaments. What was one thing that you remember the first time you stepped on to the floor at Betts Auditorium?
I think it was important for me getting to see the environment before actually playing there. You know, growing up, going to the state tournament, I think if parents, you know, it's really important for the kids to experience that. I saw it and it was like, man, I got to get there. And, you know, one of the first memories I have is, you know, we'd run out of the locker room to start the game. One guy would go to the right, one guy would go to the left. We'd run around, meet at half court, you know, do our little thing. And I remember thinking, man, it's taking a lot longer to get to half court than it normally does. You know, and that's when it really hit me, like, man, this is a big court. You know, this is a lot bigger than what we're used to. So that was the first memory I had.
That's great. Yeah, and I played down there one year as well, and I can remember specifically the head coach before the game saying, now the floor is raised, so don't be the one to trip when you're going out on the court, because 2A school, we don't have that type of thing, you know. So that's what I was thinking about until I got out on the court. But you're right, that court's a little bigger, and you know, just running plays, running fast breaks, pressing, it creates a different challenge for offense and defense out there for sure. So it's kind of fun watching these high school teams do that.
Right. I mean, you know, that week practicing, we kind of talked about the size of the court and thought it was an advantage for us. I mean, some teams it might not be. Guys, especially the team we played my first game, my junior year, they were very post-heavy, big guys. And so we thought, you know, if we could spread them out and really run, get them moving, not only get them tired, but sometimes get them in foul trouble because of the fatigue. And that's kind of what happened in that first game against Cascade for us. We were able to foul out their best player, Craig Callahan. And I think maybe part of it was, you know, he was just sick and tired of running up and down as fast as he could. And so that worked.
Yeah, that's great. And obviously game plans help out as well. It sounds like you guys had a good one. But let's maybe talk a little bit about that run to the state tournament junior year. So junior year was first time you guys made it to state. Obviously, you know, with the season, you know, made it to state, so it was a good season. But what did that entire season look like? What was the record? What was the journey like here before you made state?
So backtrack a little. As a sophomore, we had a lot of guys in my class play a lot. We were a 500 team. Kind of started to click a little bit late in the year. Made a run to the sub-state final, but lost by about 25 to Iowa Falls. You know, Nick Collison, Mike Lindemann, Prentice Lofstedt, that team. And it was a good experience, but, you know, we knew we weren't going to the state tournament that year. So the junior year, we thought, you know, we return every, you know, our core. A lot of guys made a lot of improvements that summer. But again, we were like the whole time thinking, man, Iowa Falls is still there. They're seniors now. And I don't remember when they released. I don't remember where they released the district pairings. How late into the season, but when we found out Iowa Falls wasn't in our district, we were really pumped because we knew we had a shot at getting to the state tournament. We went like 19-6 or 7 my junior year, and it was a great experience. I think everybody in the state tournament knew they were playing for second, and that's a little bit of different mindset and attitude. So we were really just trying to get experience, further grow as a team and do as well as we can. And, you know, again, I think a sign of a good team is teams that play and win late. We did our sophomore year and we really did our junior year. And that was huge. It was a lot of momentum going to that tournament.
Yeah, probably a big sigh of relief that don't have to run up to the cadets there in Iowa Falls, which is obviously good for you guys. So obviously made it there. You mentioned it, you beat Cascade in what seemed like, you know, a little bit of a different team, a little bit of a different game than what you guys are used to. What happened after that with the Cascade game? Obviously, like you said, beat those, then played Jessup, I believe. Pella Christian on there. And then so with that game, obviously it's different, you know, your second time on the floor at Vets Auditorium. You know, what was that game like? How did that game end up? And, you know, where was the mindset after that first win against Cascade?
Yeah, I mean, going into Cascade again, we didn't know a whole lot. We just knew they were big. And our tallest guy was 6'3". So we played a 2-3 zone most of that game and back then, we shot, I think, like 23 threes, 24 threes, which is a lot for a team to shoot in the early 2000s. And once we won that game, it was like relief. It was like, in my head, I was like, we got to get that first one. I don't want to come down here, lose the first one, and not really necessarily feel like we played. You know, even if we lose the second, we get a third. It was going to be great experience for our senior year run. So we went up against Pella Christian. They finished, So they had some juniors that were really good in our class, and they were up most of the game. We made a big run in the fourth, down three, called timeout, drew up a play for our best shooter, Keegan Clemens, and it just didn't work out. We're dead, you know. And they went on to lose to Iowa Falls that next game by a lot. And then we were end up playing Jessup, like you said, in the consolation game. But, you know, it's been 22 years now, and I still kind of kick myself. I had all the confidence in the world Keegan Clemens was going to make the shot, but I had it going a little bit in the fourth, and I wish I would have, you know, demanded the shot there. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20 there, but still kick myself a little bit for that.
Was it a good play, open shot for Keegan?
Great play. Dribbled him off the wing. I pushed him off, and then he was under the hoop. He came off a double screen. They kind of closed the gate there, and he caught it. Great look. And I think he had a few that game leading up. So that year, he's by far best shooter in terms of volume. And so, yeah, we had confidence in him, but rattled out.
Shout out Coach K on that play then, huh?
Right. He's not known for those X's and O's plays, but when it's out of timeout, sometimes he'll bust them out that are great.
He can go in the bag a little bit. He'll go in the bag and find something.
Right.
And in those gate plays, I don't feel like those are utilized enough. Those are some if you close the door quick enough, I mean, that guy that's guarding the shooter can't get through that. You know, it's I don't think I see that.
And then the screener can slip. Yeah. The only thing I didn't like about it is sometimes it's hard to catch the ball going away from the hoop. You know what I mean? Like the momentum and then trying to square. Like sometimes you want to be, I don't know. It creates a little confusion with the footwork, but again, Keegan planted, had a good look, just didn't fall.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, so after losing that game, played in the consolation game, and how did that game end up? And then if you could tell our listeners a little bit about, you know, mindset going into that, because obviously, you know, playing for, not playing for the consolation game, there is still a lot to play for, but, you know, just come off that loss and not playing for a conference champion, or excuse me, a state title anymore.
Yeah, to be honest, it was the Pella Christian game was really deflating. When you make a big run, it felt really good, a lot of momentum, and then you come up short to play at 10 a.m. the next day. It was deflating on us. Looking back, we stayed up really late messing around and just didn't have our heads in it and started off really slow and just couldn't get back in it. We lost that game. And it probably a lot of it was on me. I was kind of, you know, I wasn't as motivated as I should have been in that consolation, because looking back, you only get six games ever to play there. We only got, you know, we didn't know if we were coming back the next year, so it could have been our last game on that floor. But just losing that game and playing for that consolation, our mindset wasn't where it should have been.
Yeah. Understandable too. I mean, you know, it's not the NBA, it's not college, you know, it's just high school basketball. So that's for sure understanding, but, obviously good season that year. Let's maybe talk in a transition a little bit to the summer of your senior year, summer before your senior year. What did AAU look like? You know, who'd you play with, as far as players and teams go?
I played with Martin Brothers. And you know, I played the guys on my team that maybe you guys, everybody probably have heard of, is Glenn Worley, Sean Sondeliter, Jeff Horner played up with us. Let's see, David Rottinghouse. So we had a lot of, you know, high major talent on our team. And for me, it was a big summer because it was going to be my last AU summer. And I had no idea what I was going to do for college. I had, you know, all those guys were going to Iowa. And in the back of my mind, I really wanted to go there. I didn't tell anybody that, but that's what I wanted to do. And I knew, you know, I would see Alford at our games and watching those guys. And I really tried to play well and get noticed by him. I didn't. But it was a great summer for, you know, just playing against really good players and building confidence in myself. Just, you know, I did okay. And I grew a lot mentally and physically, and it was a big summer for me coming back the next year.
Well, and I think we glossed over a little bit, because the year before you had a unique opportunity when you first joined Martin Brothers, correct? Because you played with Martin Brothers your junior year as well, and had that opportunity to fill it. Essentially, how'd that work? Because it was you or Korver, right? And they decided to take you. Is that right?
No. So, I would love to say that. It was the class above me, and they had Korver play a little bit, but he decided to play with a different team. And so they had an opening spot, and I, you know, I knew all about Martin Brothers. I knew that, you know, going to Future Stars camps, I'd see guys shooting around like Collison and Kirk Heinrich and Sean Hughley, guys like that, that would have the There Goes Martin on their shorts. And I was like, man, I just want to be a part of that somehow. And the coach of that, Hank Huddleston, he coached one of my games in one of those spring Future Stars, and got my number afterward. And then I wasn't sure what team he wanted me to play for. And then he ended up calling me and saying, let me know I was going to play up and what guys are on the team. And it was one of the happiest days of my life up to that point. I was so pumped. And, you know, I was so little, and the only jersey they had left was number 50. And I looked like the coach's kid that they were just bringing along to, you know, just the coach's, you know, the kid on the sideline who just dribbles between his legs all the time, but he's little. And he's like, oh, he's going to be good when he gets older. You know, I never played, rarely played, but it was so awesome to watch how those guys work and getting to know those guys, and just being a part of that. Even without playing, I learned a lot. And that's, I credit that to a big part of why I found more success my junior years, is just absorbing everything that summer.
Well, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you also got a little experience being an agent too, didn't you? Didn't you start fielding some calls for these guys, or how did that all go down when you guys were out on?
Yeah,
on
I was like, off? Yeah, I was like the little kid who was just so happy to be there. I wasn't really, everybody else was, you know, on the team was kind of, you know, trying to play it cool. And I was just this little guy who was so pumped to be a part of all that. And it was so crazy to me that those coaches were at my games, essentially. And it was the summer, you know, Kirk had committed to Iowa State. Nick was still looking around at, you know, Iowa, Iowa State, Duke, and Kansas. And you know, that we were in Orlando, and that was when Tim Floyd, before he announced he was leaving for the Chicago Bulls, he had called. Yeah, so it was pretty cool. You know, I was the young guy again, and I didn't get my own bed, so I had to sleep on the couch at this little condo that they rented. And I woke up one morning early, and Kirk was on in the kitchen table on the phone, shaking his head, and I was asking if everything's all right, and he was like, he didn't say anything. He's just like, here, and handed the phone and walked off. And it was Floyd telling all the recruits and the Iowa State staff and players that he had chosen to go to the Bulls. He was leaving Iowa State. And, you know, that was incredible. I mean, it was a really cool experience for me. And I think, you know, Kirk was really disappointed and realized he was going to have to get to work and figure out where he was going to go with little amount of time, and so that was really cool.
Which that brings to my next question: how quickly was the transition? Obviously, he had plenty of suitors. What was it, a quick number two, or was there a little bit of a process for him to obviously settle on Kansas?
Yeah, I think recruiting was a little bit different back then. That when guys were committed, just because of the access guys have now with the coaches have now to these kids, that I think they, when guys were committed back then, it was a little bit like they kind of backed off. And so when he was committed to Iowa State, he wasn't really getting hounded by schools like maybe he would have in today's game with just the ease of text messaging. And so I think he just realized that he still may go to Iowa State, but they didn't have a coach. Iowa didn't have a coach. At the time, it was, you know, Tom Davis had just finished. And so they were figuring out who to hire that summer as well. And so what I'll never forget is, you know, I had played that whole summer with those guys. But when he found out he was going to have to open his recruiting up, he really turned his game up to another level, to where I was like, man, this guy's an NBA player. You know, before I was like, this guy's a really good player, college player, big time. And then that week in Orlando, I was like, this guy's an NBA player. And he had every coach call him, you know, found out he was, you know, open. So every coach was calling our condo that whole week, trying to speak to him or speak to Hank. And so I tried to answer the phone as much as I could, because I just wanted to hear what coaches were calling. And I acted like a 12-year-old instead of like a 16-year-old. Like, I was so excited to be there.
You learn a lot from that experience, though. I mean, you're just, you know, obviously growing up and looking back, like, God, I could have like taken a lot more, but stuff that subconsciously you wouldn't even know you were absorbing and using and putting in your bag mm-hmm. to pull out later. And so that's just, mm-hmm. I don't know, such a neat experience. Obviously you learn from every experience in life. Last question on these guys, and we'll move on, but how big of a deal was it with those two, both Nick now undecided and Kirk open, and their relationship as far as becoming a package deal? Was that a sure thing, or was it just coincidence that worked out that way?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they were obviously close, but I think they both wanted to go to the best, you know, position for them. You know, Kirk almost went to Oklahoma. He was really close to going to Oklahoma. Who was the coach? Kelvin Sampson was the coach there. And they had a really good team, like Final Four team. And I think, you know, Nick took a visit to Duke. But I think Kansas, you know, if you ever go to Kansas, go to a game at Kansas, it's like, how does anybody turn it down? So I don't think they were necessarily a package deal, but man, those two played so well together, it made sense.
Well, and it's weird to even kind of think about those two not in a Kansas uniform this many years later. You know, you like think about, mm-hmm. Oh, geez, what could have been, but it's like, I don't know, something just seemed right about those two guys, Roy Williams, secondary break. I mean, everything about it just seemed to be a good mm-hmm. fit. And obviously if it wasn't for a guy named Carmelo Anthony, it would have been a really good fit for him.
Or Jerry McNamara, 6 threes in the first half, 6 for 6 in the first half as a freshman.
Wild. Well, hey, a couple things I want to unpackage there is, number one, you mentioned the you mentioned the shorts that Martin Brothers had, and it was as a freshman, I'll never forget it. But seeing those shorts at like a Future Stars camp or wherever it is, you didn't even know the person, but you kind of thought in the back of your mind, oh, he must be a pretty good basketball player if he's wearing those shorts. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because I definitely remember those too.
It was like a stamp of approval.
Yeah, for sure it was. And then how good were those Future Stars camps? I mean, I went to several of them, and just, you know, the amount of good basketball players, competition there, and being able to like watch that as a player, honestly, was so fun. And just the environment and the, you know, the kind of setup of those Future Stars camps.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it taught a lot, because, you know, looking back, I don't know how the recruiting side of it, you know, you'd have evaluators watching each game, and I don't know how effective that was with college coaches, but at the time it was like, well, that was when you really had to perform. It really taught us, you know, like, hey, I got to really rise to the occasion here. I got Van Coleman sitting on the corner of the court watching with a pencil, like marking stuff down. And it taught a lot. I mean, that camp gave me everything, because I was able to get on that Martin Brothers team because of Future Start. And I have these relationships to this day that I made playing AAU. And so, you know, Hank Huddleston and John Martin and Van Coleman, they gave me a lot of that, you know, that I'm very appreciative of.
Those shootouts at Drake, I remember the first time that I walked into the Bell Center. So you obviously had all three courts going in the Bell Center. We had the Knapp Center. You had dudes going everywhere. And everybody was there. Like, that was like what was the cool thing about it. I mean, you know, you had everybody who was somebody that was there. And then you always had those guys come over from Chicago and the Quad Cities and stuff. And I remember walking into the Bell Center and dudes just yapping, just going at it. And Nathan Funk's out there and just busting, dude, just hitting fadeaways and glass work, and just, I'm like, okay, like, this, you know, this kid is for real. And then you have Horner and Bruner on the same team, and you have Henderson stealing from everybody who gets over half court, and it's like, it was high level stuff. And like you said, I think it just was an opportunity, especially for just a, you know, a nobody D3 player like me to go and watch these guys and what they do, and just kind of prepare yourself and take it back to your season and your gym back home in your small town and be like, all right, I gotta put in some work if I want to see Go Martin going by me every time.
Yeah, I remember, so this is a funny story, so you guys probably do this too, you know, when you check into Future Stars, you get the packet of the teams, you'd look at who's on your team, you'd see who's what players are there. And I remember it was at the shootout in Des Moines, and I think it was like 10th, 11th, and 12th would play, and then like would be the older kids, and then they would have like what, 9th, 8th, and 7th grader play too. It was two different divisions, and on the packet they'd have the grades next to the names. And the team I was playing, I was looking at the team, and I was going to be a junior, I believe. It was the spring of my junior year, I believe. And, might have been my sophomore year. But anyway, I was looking at the team I was playing, and it was all these guys, you know, 10th grade, 9th, 11th grade, 12th grade, and there was a 5th grader playing up. Not playing up to the first division, but playing with a big kid. I was like, a 5th grader from Peoria, Illinois? So I played against him, and he was really little. And I was like, man, this dude's really good, though. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget his dad. His dad was about 5'11", and the fifth grade kid ended up being Sean Livingston. And I was like, I remember telling myself, I was like, I got to remember this kid, like, you know, fifth grader. And he obviously grew up to be about 6'8". But he was a fifth grader playing with the high school kids and like kind of holding his own.
Man,
like, kind of was giving me the business, like full court pressuring me. And he was just so quick. But yeah, so those stories from Future Stars are fun, man. And I would keep those packets still, just like, I probably still have them, some of them, of the teams.
Dude, I mean, we could go on forever on these Future Stars stories. I mean, it was it was something, like you said, you would, you'd always check the lineups to see who's on your team and who was out, who was all there. And then the next step was, all right, who's got the sickest college basketball shorts on and who's got, you know what I mean? It's like, that was the prime time. I remember, I think it was Henderson had some sick Florida shorts and had the Jordan, which ones were the Jordan 15s, like white and Carolina on. And it was just like, all right, let's go. Like that was fun, man. I remember, I think it was my junior year. I skipped all pre-prom stuff that year to go down and play in Future Stars and drive back just in time to try on my tux and walk down the aisle. So that's where Future Stars ranked, though. You had to go to those shootouts.
Oh yeah. Oh, I get it.
So, well, good. So then you mentioned a little bit. So then obviously going into your senior year, playing again AAU, taking and probably, especially this now, your senior year, your big dog on campus, probably getting all sorts of skills that Coach K loved to see you bring back to St. Ed's, right?
Yes and no. I think he kind of fought the whole AAU thing. And that was like, it was like a battle. And you know, I came back kind of with a big head, thinking, you know, I played in Orlando. I should be able to, and so we kind of bumped heads a little bit. But you know, it's how it goes.
Yeah, right. It's all part of it. But okay, so senior year, a couple games before we get to that state tournament run that I at least want to note or bring up. First one, maybe a little bit sting on it, but 7 overtime game against Garrigan. I have Nelson down for 62 points in that game. I think you had 59 and fouled out in what, the fourth or fifth overtime, something like that.
Talk
to me a little bit about that. I mean, 7 overtimes. I think I flipped on the radio and caught the last, I think I might have caught all 7 overtimes because I heard it was going into overtime. So I flipped on the radio and got to treat myself to 7 of them. But walk me through that game a little bit. And obviously, Brad, a baseball player, just hell of an athlete, just holding it up too.
Yeah. We held him to, I think, 28 regulation. And then he exploded in the 7 overtimes. But, yeah, man, like that's the only game I've ever fouled out in my career. And I fouled out in the, third overtime. They just right at the beginning of the third overtime. My cousin went to the University of Iowa at the time. He was driving home for Thanksgiving break to Cherokee, Iowa. And he was like, he's going to stop and watch the game with my parents, like to watch me play in high school. And so he stopped for that game. The game didn't get over till like 12:30. And he still had like 3-hour drive after that. But it was crazy, man. We had our like 8th, 9th, 10th guys playing the last like 3 overtimes. We had a guy, one of my good friends, Joe Kuhlman, had I think 46. You know, so for the rest of his life, if anybody asks what his career high was in the game, he can say 46. But it was wild, man. It was wild.
That was just a wild game. That's one that, you know, obviously came up short in, but you'll never forget. I mean, 7 overtimes, you try to explain that to anybody, and it's like, how does that happen? And if they know anything about the Garrigan-St. Ed's rivalry, too, it just adds to that story.
Right.
But one of the other ones that I got to bring up is your game against Clarion Goldfield. Obviously, Clarion Goldfield is not any good, but you went out there and dropped 24 dimes on them. That's got to be credit to your teammates there to be able to get 24 assists in one game.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I had 4 points, and I felt like I had a lot of assists going into like the third quarter or middle of third, and I was like, let's see how many I can get, and so, yeah, I mean, I had 2 guys that finished around the rim, and I had 2 guys that were making crazy 3s on the wing. And so I was just – and they were playing man-to-man. Shout out Chip Douglas, the guy guarding me. He went to Kirkwood with me. He was a good friend of mine. But yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I took more pride in making an assist and scoring. It was fun for me to make a pass to, like, one of our wings – and kind of run back on defense before the ball went in the the hoop, you know, with that, just having confidence in those guys or seeing guys finish around the rim. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that was good. And obviously you guys put together a good regular season and then got into district play. What do you remember? I don't have this in front of me. I have your guys' state run, but who'd you end up beating in sub-state to make it down your senior year?
Garrigan.
Okay, that's what I wondered if it was them.
Yeah. So when that came out, the big team that we were worried about, I mean, Garrigan we're worried about too, but a team we hadn't seen yet was Garner Hayfield. And they had Wumpkiss and Stromer. They were big. And that was something that we struggled a little bit with just against size. Not necessarily to score, but to rebound and defend. And so when Garrigan beat Garner, I think in the second round, we were like, okay, we're probably going to have to play them. And it was at Fort Dodge Senior High, packed. And it was a really close game again. Just a battle, it always is. And it was just, you know, like John Mossback, is that it? Mossback,
yeah,
is that his name? Yeah, yep. I remember he came out for the starting lineup and did like the short alligator hand to Joe Coleman, like basically wouldn't touch it, like, and so we're like, oh, we hate these guys, let's go. And so that set it off, and it was just a battle the whole way, and I think we only won by three.
That you mentioned with that group, I mean, both Garner and obviously Garrigan, those teams were really good. You know, you guys, 2A, obviously playing in a 3A conference. I mean, all that stuff has to lead up to not only preparing you guys for the state tournament, but probably making you better and sharper once you get down to Vets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the thing with us was that we were a really good team, but we weren't like a team that was just blowing people out every game. We had blowouts, but we had a lot of close battles, which I think ultimately was really good. Like, we were battle tested. And so in the state tournament, all three of those games were really, really close. You know, we were down in all three of the games. And I think if we would have just played it in a conference where we rolled through it, we probably wouldn't have had that kind of toughness to play and not give up. And so that conference we played in really battle tested us for sure.
Yeah, so then you guys get down there, have a little bit of experience from the year before. Like you said, main core coming back. A lot of you guys are seniors, you know, with a couple of younger guys mixed in. Coming through a battle-tested conference. You have North Cedar that looks like you beat 48-45. What was that first game like? Obviously, the first game, jitters, you know, trying to kind of feel everything out and figure this game plan out. But what was that North Cedar game like your senior year?
I mean, they were undefeated, ranked number one most of the year. They had a point guard, Ryan Kedley, who was really good. Really good athlete, really good player. You know, that spring ended up, I think, having the number one 400 time in the country. You know, went to Baylor to run track. And so, again, we didn't know a whole lot. Like, tape film wasn't really as prevalent back then. Like, we would get a little bit, but it was really hard to break it down. And so we were just kind of going and playing our style, and they kind of matched it. They had a similar team. And so, they had a guy struggle at the free throw line. I remember, and we had some guys that struggled during the year at the free throw line that made all their free throws. And, I think that was a big difference. And again, it goes back to just being there, being there, being prepared and kind of acting like we've been there before. It was a big part.
Shooting at those hoops with no backdrop is always takes a little getting used to as well.
Right. It does. I mean, I guess senior year we had those square backboards. Junior year was the fan backboard. It looked like it was about 5 feet or 5 inches wide. It was crazy, but yeah, it's an adjustment. And another thing, you know, playing in the state tournament, and I still see it to this day, that's an adjustment. For some reason, guys shoot NBA three-pointers because the lines are painted out there that they would never shoot in a high school game. But they get out there and they see they're behind that NBA line, they chuck it up. And so that's kind of I don't know if it's, you know, just if they see it in the corner of their eye or something, but You always see that, man. You always see these really deep threes being launched.
I totally agree. And I think it is that line. You just kind of see a line and you let it go. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I that's a long ways. But yeah. You bring up that point. And one thing I noted today, obviously state tournament getting started today. I saw the picture. What are your thoughts on having the Wolves floor? Like, do you like it? Dislike it? Indifferent? I mean, the fact that why don't they have the actual Wells Fargo floor for the boys? Why do they bring out the Iowa Wolves floor? Any feelings on that?
I don't know. I didn't even know they. Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know.
They've done it, I know, for a while, and I just saw it today, and maybe it's fresh off of watching the girls play on the Wells Fargo floor, but I'm like, I feel like I would want the Wells Fargo floor down, you know, at the barn. I know they put the different decals and logos on there. It was the same floor. I mean, this is the state tournament. This isn't the G League, you know?
It doesn't feel like the state tournament.
Yeah. So anyway, just a little sidebar that came up, but
it's too commercial. It's too commercial now.
Yeah. Right. Jeez. Okay, so North Cedar took them down, and then Rock Valley. What do you remember about the Rock Valley game? Similar, you guys must have been on a trend. Let's hold them under 45 points because you won that one 49-45. What do you remember about the Rock Valley game?
Again, another battle. A couple things that I'll never forget that stick out. I remember early on in the first quarter, I ran a pick and roll with our big guy, John Lewis. Both guys collapsed, you know, trapped me. So I dumped it down to him, and they rotated well, and he had a shot on the left side. He's right-handed, so he shot it with his right hand on the left side, and he shot it a little long. And then Corey Bargfried, who had one dunk, you know, not a clean dunk, but one dunk during the year, and that's all I've ever seen from our team is that one dunk, came out of nowhere and dunked it with two hands. Tip dunked it with two hands. And of those three games, actually in my basketball career, I had never been more excited. Like I thought I was like, I probably could have dunked after that. I was so excited to see that. It was incredible. So that really set a tone for us. And we got hot in that first half. And similar to the championship game, we really went cold in the third quarter, had a bad third quarter, lost the lead. They took the lead. And then at the end of the third quarter, I remember they scored to go up three. I think we're up like 12 at one point. So they really took it to us that third quarter, which, you know, took a lot of the wind out of our sails. And they scored with about 5-8 seconds to go. And I caught it on the run. I was running to the right side. I shot it three-quarter court. And I just launched in the air, and I didn't even see it. And I didn't think it was going in. I thought it was short. And I was walking to the bench, and all of a sudden I heard a bang, and I heard the crowd cheer, and I had made it from that far. I could barely get it there, all my strength, and luckily made it. And the crowd exploded. We went to our benches and came out for that fourth quarter, and our crowd stood up, and it was like, man, it was huge because it gave us a lot of confidence, just a lot of momentum, and we were able to play really well in that fourth quarter. And so I think a big part was that lucky shot I threw up.
Didn't you make a half quarter in all three games, or a deep one in all three games?
Yeah. My senior year, Pella Christian, I did state championship game, and then against Cascade, my junior year.
Okay.
I made one, but I made zero the rest of my career. As you know, buzzer beaters from deep.
State tournament. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Do you think those super nice, spacious locker rooms had anything to do with your guys' third quarter droughts, or what's the deal?
Yeah, well, it's crazy. Like that game, against Rock Valley, we had the big locker room. There is like a big locker room. Like we got like
one.
You know, the home team lockers, and then the Pella Christian game, it was like a bathroom. Like we were like shoulder to shoulder, like like sardines. But it's crazy. That's just that. Those are like insiders' knowledge of people that have made the state tournament that know about that little ass locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. So then get past Rock Valley and find yourself in the championship game. A little bit of revenge, right? So you guys get to take on Pella Christian, who you'd lost to the prior year. And what was a battle? I was in the house for that one. I remember watching that game. Ton of fun. Yeah, obviously came out 3-point on top, 64-61. What was it like going into the championship game? You know, some of the feelings leading up to it, and then ultimately the game. If I remember correctly, dropped 36 on them too. So you had yourself a night. But what do you remember about the lead up to it?
Yeah. Again, you know, I always go back to like growing up and like picturing myself in that game. You know, you'd shoot in the driveway, and I always picture myself. And one thing was, I was like, we're going to be on TV. Like, I remember thinking how cool that was going to be to be on TV. And, you know, Pella Christian had lost in the state championship game two prior years that was lost both times. And so this is the third straight state championship game. So they were battle tested too. And it showed. They had a huge third quarter as well. But my thoughts were like, you know, our high school had never won a state title in a team sport, period. So I thought that was going to be really cool if we could do it. And we were confident we could win, you know, just based off the game. You know, I think we went on, if you just took the third and fourth quarter score of the previous year against Pella Christian, we outscored them by like 10 or 12. And like, we just felt really good about it. And like I said, we're in that small locker room, and we had to wait till the 1A game got over, and it was Newell Fonda versus maybe
Boyden
Hall.
Wasn't
DeWine Christian. Yeah, Boyden, I think it was Boyden Hall.
Yeah.
And it went to double overtime, you know, and so we were just like, let's get this going. Like, I wanted to get out there.
Tear away pants on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. just chomping at the bit to get out there. And we had a big first quarter, which was huge. We had guys, you know, John Lewis, our big guy, scored our first two baskets. I think it was great for everybody when he scored those, you know, his confidence and just everybody's confidence. And it's just, man, it's just a game I'll never forget. Like it's a weird feeling. I can remember, maybe it's cause I've watched it a bunch too, but I can remember every single play, like almost in chronological order. It was just a great experience.
And then you did hit, was it end of the first quarter, or when was the buzzer beater came at end of the first quarter? You threw that one in, and so that had to be a good omen. You're like, okay, here we go, this is what got us going in the last game. And so then in the fourth quarter coming down the stretch, you'll have to refresh my memory on this. What was it like? Obviously you guys got the 3-point win, but what was it like coming down the stretch in the fourth quarter?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we were up 7 going into half and playing well. And then third quarter, I think I was like 1-for-6 shooting or something. And none of us could really make a shot. And they made a big run. And they were up, I don't know, they got up to 12 or 14. There was a point with about 5 minutes to go, they were up 12.
Oh, wow.
I think. And it was, it just wasn't looking good. You know, we were pretty much, me was forcing a lot, almost panicking a little bit. I didn't feel panic, but I was watching it. It looked like I was forcing a lot of stuff, trying to get back in the game. And you know, when there's no shot clock, but you know, it's really hard to come back from 12 in the fourth quarter. So, you know, luckily we were able to pressure. And, you know, I've said this before, a lot of times when you pressure, especially late when you're down, it's not necessarily the pressure to get steals. It's more so to, you know, because you're in the state championship, these teams are good. They're not going to turn the ball over. But it's more so to get them sped up, taking quicker shots than they probably should be. And it's really what happened. They took a lot of open threes that were kind of delayed breaks that they were wide open, so they felt like they had to, and they missed, and we were able to get some leak outs and get some quick baskets. And man, I'm just so happy we were able to get that win.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions of pressing is that you're trying to steal it on every possession. It's like you said, it's just to get them to make maybe a decision they normally wouldn't make, whether that's a bad pass or whether that's a quick shot or whatever it is. And so, yeah, that was quite the game and quite the cap on what was a wonderful high school career for you. Obviously found yourself then on the all-tournament team, captain, I believe, right? The all-tournament team. First team All-State, led the state in assists that year. You mentioned how important that was for you to get your teammates involved, 255 assists that year. And so state championship complete, high school season career complete, everything hopefully that you wanted to accomplish in your career. Now what? So what does the recruitment process look like for you and ultimately your decision to play at the next level?
Yeah. I was about 5'10", 130 pounds my senior year, and I just wasn't really recruited like, you know, I thought I should be, and maybe I was, you know, maybe I was wrong on that, but I just felt like the schools that were looking at me, I just wanted something a little bit higher, and maybe I was reaching, but And so I thought maybe I should go to junior college because, you know, I'm so little. I thought I could really work on my frame and go somewhere where kind of my dream was. And so I did get an offer by Stephen F. Austin in May of my senior year. And they had gotten a new coach and some guys transferred, and it was like, really late there. I mean, the school was like 10 miles north of the Mexican border, and my mom was like, you know, she was really fighting it, and I had some D2 offers like North Dakota, but they were at the time D2 and some other Dakotas, and I just thought, for me, you know, I set a dream or a goal to myself a long time ago to play at Iowa, and I really wanted to see that through. And I thought, you know, Kirkwood was a really good team. I went and watched him play Iowa Central, and I thought that, you know, their coach was intense, but he on the defensive end, but he was also very free and allowed a lot of creativity offensively. And I was like, man, you know, I was intimidated. I was scared of him, but I was also like, man, maybe he can get me to the next level. And they're really close to Iowa, and he's good friends with an assistant, Craig Lansing, there, and it just all worked out. It was the best decision I could have made. I tell so many parents that I've talked to who have kids going through this now, like the recruitment, and sometimes they want to, like, they don't even want to think about going JUCO, like it's an insult or something. And I always tell them, like, it gives you 2 years to really figure out who you are. It's, you know, you can go into a bigger school with, you know, you can get your grades up, you know, I couldn't have had a better experience like Kirkwood. The players I played with, the friends I made, you know, that weren't basketball players. It was an important time in my life that really shaped me.
And that coach you talk about is Wags, correct?
Coach, yes. Yeah, your brother played for him.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. My brother. Yeah. What do you think of preseason conditioning for Wags?
Yeah. It's so fun. I was actually thinking about this. I don't know why I was, maybe because I feel so out of shape. I was thinking about this like a week ago that, and I was really clueless. I didn't really, you know, like my dad was a big influence in my life basketball wise, but he didn't play college basketball. So he didn't really understand either. You know, I thought, yeah, I'm playing pickup basketball every day in the summer. Like, this is my conditioning. And then I would get to Kirkwood, and it was like, you know, that September, August, September sprints on the track. And I puked every time. I mean, I puked every time. I'd always go into it, think I was in shape, but I wasn't. And it was, yeah, it was brutal.
Yep, from what I've heard, that's a word that gets thrown around quite a bit about the preseason conditioning at Kirkwood. But you know, as you kind of mentioned, I mean, you mentioned coming in a little bit maybe afraid of Wags, just from if you watch him coach. I mean, super super intense, knows the game very well. But you know, honestly, talking to him after games and stuff like that, most friendly guy you could ever meet. Just a great all around guy and a great all around basketball mind. What did your time at Kirkwood either help you work on or, help you realize maybe some flaws that you might've had in your game?
Mm-hmm. First of all, my coach in high school, incredible. He was an incredible motivator. He got guys to play really hard and he got guys to want to take charges, but we didn't really scheme wise work on, where you're supposed to be on the floor, like shell drill to really know help side, I would guard the point and I would just follow the guy over to the wing after he'd make a pass. And so when I got to Kirkwood, I think my offensive game was fine. Like, it transitioned to that level, but defensively I was so behind. I just made it way too hard on myself. A lot of wasted movement, once you know the game in terms of angles, where you can really limit the amount of steps you have to take and the amount of energy you have to exert, just knowing help side where you need to be. And that was one thing that it was a big learning curve for me. And with him, it was a lot of defense. We did a lot of defense in practice. And so, that was huge. If I didn't have that, I would have been so lost, wherever school I would have gone to after that. And so it was great for me.
Yeah. I mean, funny, just to kind of look back at that high school compared to college, and obviously it's a different level, but the amount of things you learn and the amount of things that you're taught in college basketball is just, it's incredible once you think about it. So at Kirkwood, how'd that, your freshman season go? Obviously it ended well. We can get into that here, but what was that like? And then the tournaments, and then maybe we'll talk a little bit about Danville, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, Kirkwood was it was awesome. I had, I mentioned before I went to watch him play Iowa Central as a senior, and I just wanted to kind of see what their players returning were like. I was like, man, these guys are big, fast, like. For a second, I was like, I don't think I can play at this level. Like, I was really intimidated. And so, when I got there, they had a guy named Terrence McGee, who was a sophomore. He's an assistant coach at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee now. And he was just an incredible leader, probably the best leader I've ever seen basketball-wise. And he knew how to get guys motivated, but he was very intimidating. But also very friendly and knew how to like figure guys out what made them tick, and kind of, he did that with me. I think he pushed me a lot in the fall pickup games to see what I was like. And I remember one time, we kind of argued over a call walking to get water, and he was saying something and I said something back, and I kind of got in his face. He would have killed me in 4 seconds, but I wasn't even thinking. I was just kind of lost it. I got back in his face, and I think after that he really respected me a little more. I think he just wanted to see. And so, I had a great leader with him, and then my roommate was David Gruber, who you played with, right? Did you play with him? I can't.
Yeah. Yep. He was there my redshirt freshman year.
So he was incredible. So coming out of high school, he only had Kirkwood and like Iowa Wesleyan looking at him play basketball. He was still trying to figure out like how to move, and he had such just how to figure out how to walk and chew gum. Like and every day he got better and better and better and better with his post moves, and we had a really good team. We won the conference. We won the regional tournament. Went played in Danville, and it was an awesome experience. We had two other guys play D2, and we just had a really good team.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Danville, Illinois, but why do they have that national tournament in Danville, Illinois?
I don't know. Do they still?
They still do. And there's honestly nothing to do in that town besides basketball, but that's the first time I've ever seen a drive-through liquor store Danville, Illinois.
Nice.
So
nice.
If you ever need some liquor and don't want to get out of your car, you got to drive to Danville, Illinois, for all I know, I guess.
Yeah, I remember we had a 2 to a bed. We had 4 to a room. You know, it's junior college budget. And it was like one of those where it's like you have the key to get in your room from outside.
Yeah.
You know, one of like you see in like movies.
Yeah.
And
mostly scary movies.
Yeah, it was tough. It was an experience for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously made down national tournament and ended up winning that, correct?
No.
What did that look like then?
Okay, so we played Johnson County, who was ranked 1. They had a guy going to Cincinnati named Jimmy Hubbard, I remember. And they beat us it was a close game, but they beat us. And then we end up winning I don't remember what. I don't even know if we played. So I think we lost 1-1 and lost one more. Let's see. Yeah, so I don't think we even placed. But we got 3 games down there.
And you had and then your second year, I mean, you guys had some dudes. Like, you played with Hanson. Was Wick there when you were there? Who else was – Wick was there after you?
Yeah, so was Eric.
Okay.
So then my sophomore year, we had basically a brand-new team. Pete Eggers I played with.
Okay.
And a bunch of guys from Milwaukee. I actually had a guy on our team, first name Al, last name Bert, which was pretty cool. Jordan Atchison.
Yeah.
Jordan.
Yeah. John Loveholtz. Yeah. So we end up losing to DMAC in the regional final that year. So we fell short, but we were first or second in the conference both years. We had really good teams.
Nice. And then obviously transition all the way to Iowa City, you know, the Shorewood 10 or 15 minute drive there. How did that transition happen? And then how was that experience in Iowa City playing with, you know, a lot of guys that we all know here from the state of Iowa?
Yeah. So I had, I had some D2 interest after my sophomore year. And then I also, you know, I was lightly talking to like some D3 schools like Co and Loras. You know, I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to play at Iowa, but I wasn't sure if that was going to work. I didn't know how to go about that. And so I waited until the very end, like this late spring. And again, I mentioned Martin Brothers, but I got a relationship with Greg Bruner and Jeff Horner through Martin Brothers. And they were, you know, big time recruits that were getting ready to go to Iowa. And I basically had them talk to Alford to see if there was a walk-on possibility there. And he said yes, but he wanted to see me play prime time. So I really rolled the dice. Like, I turned down all these other schools, and I was like, I really think I can prove myself on the floor. And so it wasn't official that I was going to even go walk on out to like June, late June. So that's how bad I really wanted to do that. I really believed that's where I needed to go and enrolled in school without necessarily had a guarantee of playing.
Wow. That's awesome. That's great. We could maybe have another entire podcast episode about Primetime League too, but
right.
We'll hold off on that for now. So,
okay.
Obviously Alford was there. And you played with a couple buddies, as you mentioned. What was the biggest contrast between playing for Coach Wags and playing for Coach Alford?
A lot. There was a lot. Offensively, not as much as you may think. You know, I think Wags, sometimes people think, sees the craziness, the antics on the sideline, how intense he got. But really, the only time that it was defensively, he used to tell me if I could see the rim to shoot. He gave me the absolute green light to shoot. And Alford's similar. Alford's an offensive mind. But practices were a lot different. Alford's, and I see value in both. Wags really wanted to have 2 hours, compete as hard as you can. We're going to get in shape. And I really want to teach you defense, get guys tough and just have that instinct defensively. And then Alford was, he worked a lot on defense. He was a big defensive coach, but everything he did was based off, a lot of things he did was based off live action, whether we would just compete. So whether it's just like playing 5-on-5 full court or different drills in the half court, you know, no pass or no dribble 5-on-5, where you really had to work on cutting and screening, just different things like that, that he really emphasized. And so, but their practices were like 3 hours, 3.5 hours. And sometimes people would ask me like, you know, do you ever wish you could go back and go to a school that, you know, maybe you would have been the starting point guard and have that experience. And a big part of me wishes, you know, wonders about that. But one thing we did at Iowa that I really loved, it was, you know, I was playing against Big Ten caliber players. And every day, basically, I was just playing pickup with, like, these guys, you know. And it was just so much fun for me because practices were – I look forward to practice, to be honest, because all we did was compete. Instead of just doing drill after drill after drill. I see the value in that, but Alford made practice for guys like me really fun.
You mentioned one thing as far as that opportunity to go someplace where you can play or, you know, someplace that seems like it's the right fit. And I know that obviously being a Hawkeye was a dream of yours and the experiences that you took from that are everlasting. But I think that's a good message to kind of to the young kids and the young athletes is that, you know, go where the fit is right, because maybe the fit is you playing more and going out to Western Nebraska and mm-hmm. getting some minutes, or maybe it is, you know, being around a bunch of guys in which that you can learn a lot about life and the game and get better, whether maybe you're just getting better and you know, in practice or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it's like, you wouldn't trade your experience at Iowa for anything. Yeah. So would you do it differently? Did you have some killer in you and wanted to go get buckets? Yeah. But I bet you wouldn't do a thing different.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is like, just don't mess with happy. And it's like, you know, I get to watch Iowa play. Like we talked about Iowa at the beginning of this, and it's like, I take a lot of pride that I was able to like be a part of that at a intimate level. Like I know a lot of the people within the program and even with like work, you know, I get to use that, you know, I'm in sales. I get to use that Hawkeye Cyclone. Oh, you got Cyclones on the wall. I played at Iowa. And it's just, I have a lot of pride in that. And you know, I watch it sometimes and wish, you know, I would have done a little, some things differently. But yeah, it was a dream that I had and I was able to kind of see it out.
So there's a couple big free throws in your Iowa career though, right? Which is kind of, maybe this isn't, but my question for you is what's the experience or moment that you remember the most about being a Hawkeye?
You know, my senior year, my last year, we had Pierre Pierce on our team, and he when he got in trouble, and the second time, and was off the team, we had about 12 games left, and there was about 35 minutes there where he had to kind of figure out who's going to get that, and so I ended up getting, you know, like 8 minutes of that. And that was for about 5 or 6 games. And that was an incredible experience. So you asked what stands out. Here's a couple of them. One is at Minnesota, you know, and this is why I hate Minnesota. And this is why I'll cheer against Minnesota forever. Alford put me in and late in the game, we're probably 8-7 minutes left. And they're shooting free throws. So I went on the second free throw and I was at half court during the free throws. And I was just kind of like, you know, getting my mind right. Like I'm in this game. Like, and I just started to like gaze up and I my eyes caught two adults, male adults in the crowd, like older than me now, like probably like mid 40s. And they were just kind of like moving their head back and forth, wait, trying to connect eyes with me. And as I looked at them, both guys with both of their hands flicked me off. Like they were just waiting for me to look up. And that was like, that was like, why did I check in? Like, I was like, these are grown men. So that was one. And I tell that story to people laugh every time because it's just ridiculous. Like I'm so nervous. I'm trying to like wipe my shoes off in this nervous way, and I'm like looking around, trying to act cool, like that I'm not nervous. And I see these crow men flicking me off. So that's one that I'll never forget. But for me, like, my senior night was big. We played at Ohio State, and I got to play like, I don't know, it felt like 18 minutes. It might not have been that long, but it felt like a long time. And it was an important game. Like, we had to win to keep our NCAA tournament hopes alive. It wasn't like a charity case where he put me in as a senior with and I hit a shot at the buzzer of the first half, and which is big. And there's little things, you know, a limited amount of time that I was on the floor in my career, there's little things that I'm really proud of. And one was that game. I remember thinking, you know, we're tied with about 25 seconds left, and we came out of the huddle, and I remember going to Horner and saying, if they double you, or if they pick you up, hit me. Like, I wanted the shot, and I didn't really like, and I'm just proud of that, because I didn't have time to think of the moment or how big that was. Like, I just remember when it came down to it, I didn't want to run from it. I wanted it. And I was like, that's something that I'll never forget. But, you know, again, Horner did not pass it to me there, and he shot it. He made it. And so we got the win. But yeah, it was those are some experiences.
It's probably not the first time that Horner passed up a pass.
Look me up. I guess, yeah. Right? He's all-time leader and assist when he finished his career, but he looked me up there, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, man. Tough. But yeah, cool stories and cool, you know, just from coming from two, obviously, college basketball players too. It is those little things that, you know, you get from just being on the team. You know, you don't necessarily have to be a starter. You don't necessarily have to play all the minutes, but just those little things that you remember and could bring with you. So that's very cool to hear. Well, we like to end our podcast here with a little section called Rapid Fire. And maybe a little twist to it this week too, with Brian coming up with a little bit of a twist, but, cool. Brian's going to ask some questions and just hit us with, what you think.
All right, let's do it. Okay. First one, this is probably easy, but we like to start with a little bit of a warm up. The Barn or Wells Fargo?
The Barn, 100%.
Yeah. Right.
Easy answer.
Favorite visiting high school gym that you played in? Visiting as a visitor.
Webster City, I think it was called Jeff Gym.
Love, yeah. Jeff Gym.
Yeah, that it was loud, it was hot. They hated me, particularly me, but our team, and I just loved it. I loved every part of it.
Jeff Gym would have six people in it, and it would sound like there was 600. Yeah. Like, it was crazy.
Got that balcony on the top.
Yeah.
They all had the newspapers during the starting lineup. First time I saw guys hold up newspapers during the starting lineup.
Nice.
I just loved it.
Yeah, that was fun. Favorite basketball shoe?
The Nike Air Jet Flights, I believe.
Okay.
Jet Flights, yeah.
Jet Flights, what year? Give me a throw out. Roughly
96? So yeah, around there. Maybe later than that. It had a little strap. Steve Nash wore them.
Okay.
It basically looked like, yeah. Like, it's hard to explain. I can't find them anywhere. They were the lightest basketball shoe,
yeah,
I ever had. They just fit like an aqua sock almost.
Love it. Better career if healthy, Grant Hill or Brandon Roy?
Who? Grant Hill.
Yeah.
I think Grant Hill was the LeBron before LeBron in terms of just filling up stat sheets.
Yep. Toughest guard in high school.
I should say Brad Nelson, since he scored 62.
Did you have to guard, guard Brad though?
I didn't. I was not our best defender. I guarded Dwayne Wade in AAU. And at the time he wasn't Dwayne Wade, but he's still really good. And I'll always have that to say. Yeah.
And maybe a close second, fifth grade Sean Livingston then.
Yeah. He was right there.
Who's throwing it back? Obviously, you guys stayed champs in 2000. And so back then, who was a must-have artist on your playlist going in your senior year?
Oh, man, I listened in my Discman before the state championship game. I listened to a little artist named Twista, and he had the Speed Not Mobsters on his album, and I bumped that in the stands before that game.
I love the disc man drought. That's legend, yeah, right there.
Just don't bump it. Start the song over. Had the bass boost and everything. I was ready to go.
Oh man, that's great. All right, so if you're on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, who would your phone a friend be?
Nobody you guys would know, but his name's Griffin Carr. I think he spends all his time. I called him Ask Jeeves during a vacation once a group of us went on, because he had little information about everything.
He
must read trivia every day.
That's awesome. You gotta have somebody like that. So, all right. And then to finish here, just a little segment, overrated, underrated. If you really don't feel like you can say, if you can say it's in the middle or it's right rated, that's, I'm fine with that too, but overrated, underrated. Taco Tico.
I don't want to say it's overrated, but I'm not that, I'm not like obsessed with it like other people from Ford Dodge are.
Okay. Dodger Stadium, most specifically the baseball stadium. What do you think? Dodger Stadium, overrated, underrated?
Underrated. I think it's the best in the state.
Dude, that baseball stadium is pretty legit. So, Nas.
Underrated.
Was he? Had to make a few. He's probably more low key lyrics as opposed to pregame, right?
Yeah, he was. I was a big fan of his, and I gotta give a shout out to my wife. She went to Hoover High, and when we first started dating, I played a Nas song, and she actually knew all the lyrics. And I was like, "I think I gotta marry you."
That's awesome. The Jordan 10s, the I'm back retirement accomplishments on the bottom. Overrated, underrated?
Overrated.
Okay. Tavern Pizza.
Underrated.
Okay.
It's great. It's a great spot to bring your family to, your kids.
I agree. That's a good spot. And then the mid-range jumper.
That's a tough one. Nobody shoots it anymore. But I'm going to say overrated.
Okay. Analytics, they're telling you that, or what?
Yeah. Ask Jeeves.
My analytics are telling me the percentage to get of a shot there to get 2 points versus the percentage to get a 3 point doesn't work.
All right.
Oh, that's great. Well, and then last one here to end on. Little piece of advice that you can give to maybe some young players out there that are trying to give them or their team an opportunity to play at the state tournament, play at the next level, and just really take the most that they can from the game of basketball. What advice would you give those listeners?
Yeah, one thing that really stands out, I talked about it, I think, a few times in this. You know, there was times where, like I said, when I watched Kirkwood play, or when I would go to Future Stars, or when I played played up with like Kirk and Nick and watched those guys, a lot of times, you know, I would find myself intimidated, or I would be like, I just think confidence is so huge, and that, you know, I would put certain guys or certain schools on pedestals. And I think, you know, if I could talk to kids, it's like there's a really fine line between Division I and Division III players. Like a lot more, it's a lot closer in terms of talent. Not talent, but it's in terms of just being able to play basketball than I thought it was when I was growing up. I thought, you know, I'm probably a D3, D2 player in these Division I. You know, when I got to Iowa, I thought these guys are way better than me. And that's just the wrong mindset. I think kids need to, you know, I'm not saying, you know, not be humble about their game, but to understand if you work at it enough and you play enough, you can succeed against much more talented players. It's not that line is not as far as some may think. And that was one thing that affected me. When I got to Iowa, I was just happy to be there. And I don't think that's the right mentality to have. And so I think about that a lot.
I think that's great advice too. And I think it's something where it really just kind of comes down to opportunities. Like you said, there's like, if you can play, you can play. And then it's a matter of, okay, here's your opportunity. And do you take advantage of it or not? And so that just comes down to preparation. Just be ready so you don't have to get ready. And so perfect. I love that. That's great advice. Jack, we appreciate you taking some time, man, and jumping on and talking hoops with heads. And obviously looking forward to another state tournament run here this year for the guys that get an opportunity to make it down to Des Moines. But as always, man, we appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks, guys. It's I love talking hoops, man. I appreciate you guys.
Awesome. Well, we'd love to have you back sometimes. We love talking hoops too. And cool. As Brian said, it was great to talk. Great to hear your story. From me just kind of following it from an outsider's perspective. Great to hear some insight there too. But and as usual to all of our listeners, we appreciate you. Everywhere you get your podcast, if you like what you hear, we appreciate a 5-star rating. You can catch us on the social media, Shooters Touch on Facebook, at Shooters Touch IA on Twitter and Instagram, and our new website, shooterstouchpodcast.com. As usual, shooter shoot. Had a bounce back, was a ray in my mind. Hustling harder than ever before. Saying I change cause I like when I shine. The diamonds hit different like Mike in his prime. I got the shooter's touch. Can't nobody ball like me.